James and John asked Jesus, "Grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory." Now, there's a positive and a negative way to look at this request. Let's start with the positive. The positive is that they wanted to be close to Jesus. Now, some of you may react and want to say, no, what they were really after was glory. And certainly we'll come to that. That is the negative side of what they were asking for. We'll come to that. But first, let us note that Jesus did not rebuke these two men for their request. Instead, Jesus lamented, "You do not know what you are asking." What didn't they know? They still didn't understand Jesus' three warnings, that he was going to be arrested, that he would suffer, and that he would be killed. We wonder, after they've heard him say this three times, how could they not understand? But consider that if you had been following Jesus for all of this time, so many of his teachings had been caught up in parables, in illustrations, in cryptic sayings. He called himself the Son of Man without really clarifying, "This is exactly what I am trying to say." And the language that seems so clear to us now, that word risen from the dead, it just means rise. All they would have heard was, "I will die, and 3 days later, I will rise." Well, that sounds cryptic to me. There was no word that meant resurrection. When someone was lying down and sick, Peter's mother, it's that same word. Jesus healed her, and then she rose. Well, not rose from the dead, but it's the same word. So we might have a little bit of sympathy for them, especially not really having a sense or an expectation that resurrection was something that was imminent or about to happen. They did not understand. And perhaps they thought Jesus was continuing to speak cryptically, metaphorically. Jesus himself knew something more. Not just that he would suffer, but that these young men really did love him. They really did want to follow him. They really had left everything. They really had spent all their time with him. And when Peter said, "I won't abandon you," I think in that moment Jesus knew that he wanted that to be true. And Jesus knew that they would all endure terrible hardship later in life, all because of him. Most of them would be executed. Many of them would be tortured. All because they loved him. We want to be at your side in your kingdom. You want to sit with me? You want to be near me? Is that your goal? There will be a cost. Jesus uses a metaphor. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink? Are you able to be baptized with my baptism? Is it possible, it is possible, or perhaps unlikely, that Mark is alluding to communion and to baptism? It is accurate, even if this isn't what Mark is speaking about specifically here, it is accurate, it is true, that the cup and the waters of baptism are essential for drawing near to Jesus. But clearly Jesus meant here, the way to knowing me involves suffering. We might for a moment say a prayer for our brothers and sisters around the world today who risk everything in life out of love for Jesus, out of his desire to sit near him in the kingdom. Some of you might remember how one of our partners in the Middle East shared with us in person over Zoom how he passes through dozens of Syrian army checkpoints, leaves his family behind, passes through all of these checkpoints, through the army that searches him and takes whatever they want, just so that he can finally, in the end, reach a city where there are new churches being formed. That man and those young Christians risk their lives because they want to be near Jesus. Or I think of another story, a young woman, an Egyptian Muslim. She approached a friend of mine who was a priest in Egypt at the time. She got to know him. He walked her through the scriptures, and she said, "I want to be baptized." Now, he wanted her to wait. He wanted her to be careful. She knew she was risking the loss of family, friends, her work, and even risking arrest. But she insisted, "I want to be near Jesus." There are thousands of our brothers and sisters who suffer around the world to be near Jesus. It is not quite the same for us. But there are moments in our lives, in your lives, when you are asked to carry terrible burdens. And I'm not suggesting, and nor do I think it's Jesus, that we ought to go out and seek trouble, nor that somehow in the midst of trouble and pain and grief that we ought to somehow in a perverse way enjoy it. And if we are in trouble, it might be good for us to ask if we've brought it on ourselves and there's something in us that needs to change. Is it because of our own choices and behavior? But if hardship, grief, and pain come, or perhaps I should say, when it comes, we have this consolation that somehow this suffering is bringing us closer to Jesus, and we will sit with him at his right hand or left. If Jesus is your goal, if heaven is your goal, are you able to drink that cup? Augustine commented on this story. "The homeland is life in Christ. The way is dying with Christ. The goal is abiding with Jesus eternally. The way is suffering with Jesus now." And then Augustine challenged us. How are you seeking the homeland if you are not seeking the way to it? By which he means, how is it that you might say you are seeking heaven if you are avoiding suffering? Before we are too hard on James and John, we remember that in the end, they were both willing to drink the cup, and they did so out of love for Jesus. But there probably was a desire for glory on their part. They still perhaps had this sense that a new Israel was about to be established here on earth in that very moment. They were just outside the capital. They were just outside David's throne. Maybe it's about to happen. I don't really understand all these things that Jesus is saying, but I have a sense that something crucial and powerful and earth-shaking is about to take place. Now, we know what they were thinking partly just from the reaction of their fellow disciples. When the other disciples heard it, they were indignant. Why? Were they shocked that two of their own could ask something so presumptuous? Were they shocked that two of their own would ask something so self-seeking and so self-serving? Or were they upset that James and John got there and asked before they could? It is probably the latter. Because Jesus was concerned not for James and John in that moment, but for all of them. And so he gathered them all and spoke to all of them these words. You know that among the Gentiles, Their rulers lord it over them. Their great ones are tyrants. Not so among you. Whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be the slave of all. For I came not to be served, but to serve, and to give my life a ransom for many. I think we understand that picture of Jesus serving and therefore we serve. But I want to connect that to ransom. What is a ransom? When somebody has something, or somebody takes someone and then says, you can only have it in exchange for money, a certain amount. So there's two things about a ransom that I want us to have in mind. First, there is a value set on that thing that is being held, the person or the object. There's a value set on it. And secondly, that what is happening is the person is being, or the thing is being set free once it is paid for. This word is used, not often, but it is used in Roman times in terms of a slave being purchased and set free. They were ransomed. Now, it is very likely, given the wording, the exact words that Mark or that Jesus uses here, that Jesus is pointing us to Isaiah chapter 53, which is the passage of the suffering servant. He, at one point, he's almost quoting word for word Isaiah 53, chapter verse 10. This is the passage that says, referring to this servant, that was the time we weren't exactly sure who it was before Jesus. This is what Isaiah wrote. He was despised and rejected by others, a man of suffering and acquainted with infirmity, wounded for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the punishment that made us whole, and by his bruises we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have all turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed, he was afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth, like a lamb that is led to a slaughter. By a perversion of justice he was taken away. It was the will of the Lord to crush him with pain. He gave his life as an offering for sin. The righteous one, my servant, shall make many righteous. He shall bear their iniquities. He has poured himself out to death. It is these words, you gave your life to make many righteous, in verse 10, that are almost word for word echoed here by Jesus. Humanity was ruled by sin and death. We were enslaved. Human lives were demeaned, reduced, diminished, and cheapened. But Jesus gave his life so that we could be set free. We were ransomed. And so by giving his life, he established our value and the value of every human being you meet. Jesus, the best of us, the beloved Son of God, we are worth his life. We were ransomed in this way. So we have a contrast. Jesus and the kings and the tyrants and the great of this world. What is a king who does not have any people? What is the executive of a company if there are no employees? And what is a parent if everyone in their family refuses to have anything more to do with them? Every person in power and authority on earth They depend on the very people in their care for their position. The temptation is to become a tyrant, to look at those people as serving your purposes, to lord it over them. But instead, they could understand that their role is to serve. This is part of the yeast of the Pharisees and the yeast of Herod, that there are people who just feed off of other people, who just use other people for their own purposes and needs. But instead, we know Jesus. Jesus who feeds us. Jesus who provides for us. We do need to know that we are loved. We do need to know that we have value and purpose. When we come to Jesus, Jesus is the one who provides these things in abundance so that there is always more left over. Jesus is the one who provides these things so that we do not have to depend so much on one another for our life and value and meaning, purpose. Instead, we are able to turn to one another out of the fullness that we've been given and to share freely with one another. Some people use other people that they might be affirmed and increased in their own value. But Jesus lives to raise the value of others. Kings and tyrants make others serve them. Jesus came to serve. Kings and tyrants say, "You are here to make me great, to increase my honor." Jesus says, "I am here to make you great." Do you know a boss, a friend, or someone in a family who acts as if all the people around them are there for their benefit? "You are here for me so that I will be respected. You are here for me so that I will be valued. You are here so that you can do what I tell you to do." Instead of thinking, "I am here to see that you thrive. I am here to see that you are able to be the greatest you can be. I am here to find ways to take care of you." And it is not just executives or leaders that we might think of, but fellow employees. People who say, "This company owes me. I'm not going to do a single thing more than the very smallest bit that I am asked." Or as residents of this city or province or company or country who say, "This isn't my problem, this is somebody else's problem. I am owed, I deserve, it's my right." And in both cases, we could ask, "How can I serve the people around me? How can I help contribute in a new way? What more can I do here?" I have a simple picture in my mind, or rather, let me just say that it seems we are so concerned about being taken advantage of in our workplace and as citizens, as friends and as family. We are so worried about being taken advantage of. And there is also this underlying fear that perhaps we aren't able to put into words. Sometimes I hear it. Everyone else is making more money than me. Everybody else has things figured out in their life together. And when we look at one another from that perspective, it's almost impossible to serve. I have a simple picture in my mind. Maybe it seems trite, but to me it captures the essence of what Jesus is saying. It is a picture of my dinner table growing up. A scene that happened over and over again. We would all be sitting around the table, the five of us, my mother, my father, my siblings, and someone would say, "Oh, we're out of milk." And without a word, my father would quickly be the first to get up and simply go to the fridge, get the bag, fill it, cut it, and bring it back to us. My father did many important things. He was the executive of a fairly large company for a while. This is just a small thing, maybe insignificant. And maybe we might say there were other more important things that he did, and yet to me, this is greater than anything else. This small act. And I have yet to live up to that standard with any kind of consistency in my own life. In this congregation, I have other examples. I think of Eva, who, if she were here, would come up here and hit me with something if I were to say her name in public. Eva, who in her 80s, I would come and there she was downstairs. I can't teach the children anymore. But I'm going to come and I'm going to wipe down the tables and chairs every month and set things in order. I would see her on the streets. Do you want a lift? Nope, I want to walk. Where are you headed? I've got a list of people that I want to visit, shut-ins and people in hospital and friends and home. That's what she did day after day until she couldn't walk anymore. I think of Marge and Ken Bloomfield. Quietly served in the nursery, quietly served and taking care of this building and wanting to be behind the scenes, not wanting their names mentioned. I think of Ken and Blanche. Ken, who was alive when I was here, serving in the way he could at the back as an usher, and his time during the week taking people from the prisons and teaching them woodworking skills. Things that they did not want anyone to know about. These small acts are, of course, the greatest that this congregation has produced. Now, the goal of all of this is to be near Jesus, to find in him our purpose and our meaning and our fulfillment, and to one day see him face to face in the kingdom. And to Jesus be all the glory in his church. Amen.